Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. We are listening. You are listening once again. We are listening once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. It's about 3 weeks before the Mosque Cares Convention will be held the 2nd, the 3rd, and the 4th of September. Some have said that, well, we've seen the Democrats, we've seen the Republicans, we've seen all these conventions. And to me, the most important convention will take place the 2nd and 3rd and 4th, for it portends what will happen in African America, and African America portends what will happen in America, and the Muslim community, Imam W.D. Muhammad, portends what will happen in the Muslim world towards a revitalization, a re-energization, a reimaginization of all three institutions. That is to say, Al-Islam. That is to say, African America. That is to say, America. So greater days ahead. I've had an opportunity to visit with some of the people in the heavens, and I must report to you that all is well in the heavens. And the heavens are beginning to open up. The clouds are coming back. And we are prepared to remake the world. I want to invite all of our audience to be in Tinley Park, Illinois, at the Tinley Park Convention Center in Cook County, the county of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the county of the Imam Waruddin Muhammad, the county of President Barack Hussein Obama. For there in Cook County on the 2nd of September, I will deliver a major address. The address will be competing to be the greatest community on earth. God says to us, go forth as in a race for all that is good. Kyrie. And I reminded that our brother, Honorable Noble Man's wife, is Kyrie. Very good, the good. So we are honored and privileged to have him with us today. And I want to start by asking the question, what does this tell us? The fact that the state of your birth, the state of the birth of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Dr. King, may be tilting blue. What does that say about the slavery, suffering, and death rattle of certain elements in these republics, this republic? Does it say something that all the people in this country are not going for the okey-doke? And secondly, what does it say for a future of African Americans and other good people who even have traditional values, traditional understanding of life and scripture coming together to form a new coalition?
First of all, brother Imam, assalamu alaykum to you and your listening audience, and it's a pleasure to be here today. Let me say, roughly 101 years ago, African Americans migrated to the urban areas of the North, looking to establish themselves in the land of Canaan. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Littles and others were part of that migration. Some went up the coast, Philly, New York, and Boston. Others went up to Chicago, the Midwest, Detroit, what have you. And they did not get a chance to build Canaan. But they came across a life-giving seed that can be blown back to the land of their ancestors. And what we see happening on the political level in Georgia, in my opinion, is a prelude for the reaffirmation of the Black Belt running all the way from Virginia to Houston, Texas. And Georgia rightfully so, being the first kickoff catalyst for that, because the Georgians who struggled and sacrificed to discover the sea, to give life to civilized community for African Americans, were from Georgia. So it's only, in my opinion, fitting. What we see happening politically is the first step of diverse, universal culture and civilization developing in the Black Belt, with Atlanta being the center of that, spreading to the east, northeast, and spreading west to Texas. That's what we see. And we'll be in the vanguard. But we're talking about a multi-ethnic, multi-creed coalition evolving around those who are planting the seed that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his son, Imam Muhammad, worked so hard together, to gather up, to garner. That's what I see coming, Brother Imam.
Well, let me ask you another question that's somewhat personal to me. I happen to have a son of mine who's just been inducted into Morehouse College. In his class is a stellar group of young men. My son was actually shocked and surprised to find that there's one young man in the class wants to be the mayor of Atlanta. Another one intends to make a political career in New York. These are 19, 18-year-old young men. Two of them actually plan to be the president of the United States of America, plan on going to Harvard Law School, already mapping themselves out to go there and accept responsibility to lead America. It's the home of the great Benjamin Elijah Mays, at least his last academic home, the training ground of the great Howard K. Thurman. It seems to me all is well in the heavens. These are young men who are not sagging, prepared suits and ties, arguing on the meaning of Plato. I think they will soon argue on the meaning of Imam Wahdi Muhammad. I'm very pleasantly surprised at a robust discussion. And perhaps you'll even get a call from these young men. I hope they'll invite you to the House to talk about politics in the South and to talk about what this portends for America. Would you care to comment on that?
Well, let me say this. What I have to say is interconnected with the previous answer. Imam Muhammad, who crystallized the seed concepts gleaned from the Holy Book of the Muslims that can give us new community life, he said he came to work on the state, the inner state of African-American people. Now, we have a president of these United States. Many of us, in our ignorance, trying to judge him based upon what kind of policy has been implemented in the external state of the United States of America. That's the only thing we could blindly see in our short-sightedness. This president was influenced in his internal state, I'm sure, by Imam Wahdi Muhammad. What you see at Morehouse is not unique now. We have a young generation 17, 18 years old were not even adolescents when President Barack Hussein Obama went into the White House. But all we could see was get caught up in this old sabotage and mess where people critiquing him, sabotaging and critiquing at the same time, trying to prevent him from having massive success. Now, I want you to listen to this in terms of policy in the outward state of America. Steve King, a congressman who's out of Iowa, who said in the Republican convention that virtually no other segment of mankind had made any contribution to the march of humanity and our development but white civilization. This same man, not at the polls of going south on Donald Trump, made the statement last week, super conservative, ultra conservative, super Tea Party type, that we're going to be able to work with Hillary Clinton, Secretary Clinton. How can he make that statement so fast? She's a Democrat, he's a Republican. They have been sabotaging Democrat President Barack Hussein Obama. I'm getting ready to answer your question. So why can we say in advance that they're going to be able to work with Secretary Clinton? They no longer have the goal of limiting the success of him so that we wouldn't go crazy with his success and everybody could think that we could imitate him and surpass him. So they wanted to keep his record on a de minimis level. I'm just telling you like it is. What they couldn't sabotage was the imagery of people like your son and other 17 and 18-year-old American children, but primarily African-Americans, psychic being impacted forever in inferiority complex in the inner state being undermined. Not only fantasizing or imagineering the presidency, but seeing daily the image of an African-American man running this country. Brother, if Obama didn't do anything but sit in his seat, that massive impact on the inner psyche of our young people is invaluable. And they'll never look at the world again. I'm surprised it's not 29 that want to be president. In time, as they get off into the world of higher education, we're going to be amazed at the scope of the ambition of this generation whose inner state has been impacted on a deep, deep level by watching an African-American ham, who this world mythologically said was not suited to do anything to be but a flippant, hero wood and carrier water. This is what we're talking about. So all those people out there in the ignorance can't see anything about government, what they have been brainwashed to be concerned about, even though they say render unto Caesar that which is Caesar, the external state, and render unto Christ the inner kingdom that's within, that he talked about, that's more important for people in their essence than any little bill coming out of the external state government. I took a long time, but remember, you still plugged in.
Oh, absolutely. I'm plugged in. Not only that, I'm plugged in to the universal teachings of Imam Warith Al-Din Muhammad, which automatically plugged me into any truth teller that's out there. And I believe that the next mission, and I'm Brother Imam, you don't have to join me in this. This is why I'm so hard on our imams who sat at the table with imams. I'm not hard on imams who didn't sit at the table. I sat a few times in the meal I got from him because I want to say this to the audience. I don't want to mislead anybody. Imam Muhammad said, I gave the imams more than I gave you all, talking to people. And he said, they are supposed to teach you. I got phenomenal insights. I only probably spent no more than 40 hours with the imam told. Maybe a little bit more, but not much more. Other than, I'm talking in private, I had opportunity to discuss every major issue that I discussed on the program. So I'm discussing from now on. I want you all to know this. I also want you all to know that I'll be giving the khutbah Friday, September 2nd, and that khutbah will be how to be the, not being the most competitive people on the face of the planet Earth. That's the khutbah. But I want to say this, that the reason I am hard on them, especially the big boys, Imam Muhammad saw in them weaknesses and proceeded to teach them right on up to his death. And if they have decided not to teach the public and teach their public and our public, then I have a right to condemn them. Our people should be leading people to vote. We have enough people in the state of Georgia. If our people were to awaken them, just the African-American, we have enough people in the state of Georgia, the African-Americans who didn't vote for Ms. Samson's daughter, there's enough of them to have put her in office or to put an African-American on. The number of African-Americans didn't. Perhaps they're right near the masjid there and different masjid, and we have an awakened, a political giant, the sleeping African-American people that don't have a reason to vote. You're one of the wisest political men on earth. What's wrong with the picture why we haven't gone out into Buttermilk Bottom, Vine Street? I'm speaking to Atlanta because I know right now people in Atlanta are listening to me because my son is listening right on the campus of Morehouse College. He has the phone on. He's listening. Alfred Y. Muhammad. Why aren't, and I want to give an explanation, why we haven't gone out into the streets and have, one brother now proposed to have teach-ins everywhere our people gather. Not just to vote for the president. I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. I'm going to give you the mindset, because I'm not a political person. I am a religious person. And you have an obligation to vote. And you have an obligation to use your intelligence. So this is not a partisan program, but I want you to tell us, and this is a question I'm paraphrasing Imam Muhammad, what's wrong? I want a lot of my witnesses, I'm coming close, I'm almost memorizing, what's wrong with you imams who won't go out and teach our people? I would like for you to comment on that, because I know there are people listening, and I want them to hear an explanation from a wise political figure such as yourself.
Well, first of all, unstatesmanlike political who could be mastering the mechanics of out of state or out of government is not alone. Those individuals who are charged by God with the book in their right hand to keep the inner state of the masses in excellent working shape, they can give themselves over these what I call psychic politicals, like to be over the inner state of the people and be looked up to be looked upon as some kind of royalty, a special class within itself, sprinkling magic. In the case of many of us, sprinkling that magic is dazzling of people who are English-speaking people that'll probably be that way in mass for the next 30, 40 years with Quranic Arabic. You don't have to tell me. I know that we should study that. It's one thing to study it and use it as a liberation tool for the interstate of our people. And it's another thing to sprinkle for a dazzlement strategy so that one can be looked upon as an intercessor. You can only get through to the Creator through me and my mastery of Arabia. That's ridiculous. And in the meantime, we give them a package, Eastern imported daily diet of this dean package. But some who want to think everybody in shirk and we're super, they're given packaged Cheerio Islam. For some who want to be popping game and pull a wrist, they give them a raisin brand form of Islam. For those who want to be little in the cave, sleeping, passive days, they give them some sugar smacks. They are not being presented the essence of Al-Islam that Prophet Muhammad brought. And what's that essence? Not that you sitting around smacking on Cheerios or consuming raisin bran, laxative, to spew out your BS or turning people into sweet little sugar smack deers caught up in the rituals. No, the prophet said in one word, in one sentence, he who is best among you is he is most useful to society. I don't need a whole bunch of dazzlement language to understand that. Sojourner Truth understood that. She was useful to society. Ain't never seen a Quran. Harriet Tubman understood that. Huh? Useful to society. Ain't never heard of a hadith. Gabriel Prosser understood that. Never heard of any pick. Huh? Fannie Lou Hamer understood that. Never fasted a day of Ramadan. You get the picture. But they were very useful to society. And as souls, they did more to help our people than all these dazzlers put together. That's just a fact.
That's yes,
just
sir.
A fact. He who's best among you is he or she who's most useful to society. That's clear. All these dazzle, they've heard that statement over and over again, so we can't plead ignorance or lack of knowledge. If we don't know the one verse in our religion, we can step out, penetrate the society, and be used to it. So that's the problem. We're ignoring the essence. A teaching like that of the Layla Yulallah is a key principle in the essence of this religion.
Brother, ma'am, it would seem, I'm going to not use equivocal terms, it is absolutely clear to me, and I'm going to say this crystal clear, that your community development class is the very essence of what Allah's purpose is and giving us the guidance of the Quran. The Quran is a book, if I'm not mistaken, and you much wiser than I, and you can correct me, but it seemed to me very clear that community development is the destiny of man. How to live with himself and community, We can live. One can live as a hermit. Doesn't need very much of the guidance of God. Just go out and be a wild human being and just eat food. But you come in contact with human beings, you need the guidance of God. You need it, particularly in a complex society. So I believe that your community development class is a sure way to develop the human being in particular and our neighborhood, time and space. Would you care to comment on that?
Yes, sir. There was material effort at reconstruction after the Civil War, and those efforts were reversed in 1876. We got a second bite of the atom to not only undergo a second attempt at material reconstruction, but also, I'm my cell phone ringing, dearly beloved audience, let me turn that off. But also, the most important inner crack at reconstruction, when Imam Muhammad came along with his strategy to reconstruct the inner state of our people. Reconstruction in its essence wasn't about this little social, governmental, political policy that they were advocating. We didn't understand that. We were reduced to three bills, deconstructed. Do you understand? You know this. So we had to be reconstructed internally. In all the history from 1876 up until 1975, and we're confused. It was not to get civil rights or to promote black nationalism, but to lay a foundation for the one who could build through concepts, through wise edification, could build an internal edifice to redevelop the internal state of African American people, was the key. And we know that this man taught us, and I'll say to this audience, those who have been indoctrinated with Christian tradition, he told us, go look at Adam. He said male and female, and he said name them Adam. So the man said that Adam was a community. Then he said Abraham was a community. And then he said, Muhammad is a community. That's what it's all about. That's why prayer and Jumu'ah, when we come together, is 27 times better. 999. When we come together, is 27 times better than being on those Cheerios and Raisin Bran and Sugar Smacks, concerned about like we still in the other institution some little individual salvation. Yes, we say Hayat Salat, develop the individual life, but we close that thing out with cultivating the community life. That's what this religion is all about. So on a practical level, that's why I started in Selma, Alabama, community development, because I knew that my brothers and sisters in the city, primarily African Americans, because there were no Muslims at the time, had remnants of the badges and incidents of slavery. I'm hoping one day we'll get our scholars and our leader minds, some of your sons in his class, your son and his classmate that attend Harvard, and go and begin reflecting on how we can use not the 14th Amendment equal protection, but the 13th Amendment that could be broadened in its application to deal with the remnants of slavery and involuntary word, servitude, the psychological, mental, and other badges and incidents of slavery. Our community demands through circumstances, brother, ma'am, development. Development. We must develop our community, overcome the negativity that we see that can be traced back to slavery and involuntary servitude that's reflected in the badges and incidents of slavery. Our system is about community life. But if we got a bunch of undeveloped individuals, brother, ma'am, how can they function on the excellent community level before we have a strategy of community development? That's how I would answer that.
Well, I think you've answered quite profoundly. What would you say to Sister Professor Michelle Alexander and her husband, who is a prosecutor? It seems to me that's the twin of the criminal justice system. One a defense attorney, one a criminal justice attorney. That's why we got to get you on the campus to discuss with her. It seemed to me your community development class, and I wisely you referred to your knowledge of street poison. Why is it so important before talking about mass incarceration to talk about mass incineration? And as one who is experienced in working the docks on the defense table and also on the prosecutor table, I want you just to share with us, as long as you think it's necessary, your view on this mass incineration that leads to mass incarceration.
Yeah.
And how community development class, without ritualism, can invite our people to embrace their intelligence, to embrace their business sense, to embrace our global sense, to in fact embrace our organizational sense, to be one of the greatest, to be not the one, but the greatest people on earth. It seems to me that the life that we have lived on the plantation uniquely prepares us to be the greatest people on earth. Would you comment on that?
Certainly, and we had a wonderful leader and the late Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And in this world's life, they talk about the life cycle under what's called a monomyth or the myth of the hero. And the life of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad follow the pattern that's in that myth. He lived most of the time as a leader in Chicago, Illinois. But in his waning years, he spent a lot of time in Phoenix. People don't know that our brother Muhammad Ali, when he passed away, spent a considerable amount of time, was basically living in Phoenix. Why was that? Let's think about that image of a Bennu bird or the Phoenix bird. It symbolizes mega transformation, resurrection, regeneration. But before that stage kicks in, it has suffered mass incineration. It has burned itself up in the ashes. And the solution is it was not to worry about the mess or the prison that confine his mobility, but to worry about the sweet aroma of principles that could initiate ashes. And thanks be to our Lord. Muhammad Ali's mentor, the son of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, was invited to Pensacola, Florida, by an imam he called the General. He's passed away now, may God forgive him of his sins. And right there in Pensacola, the imam taught us the cosmic science of the phoenix. The Arabs didn't teach us that. The Caucasian didn't teach us that. Academia didn't teach us that. And he said that in order to bring about that resurrection, before the people of the phoenix smell the sweet aroma, go read about it. They say it's an incense or aroma that it starts smelling before it's resurrected. But the man say first water is brought into the picture. And he said that before we can become attracted to rational cosmic truth, we must change our sentiments. Because it was wrong sentiments and sensibilities that allowed us to take on a lifestyle where we burn ourselves up. And the penis burn itself up in a mass incineration. So the purpose of community development is to look for a two-stage process, bringing water that will remake the world of human sentiments and sensibilities and sensitivities. That's the throne of the resurrection. But as the bird rises up through the spiritual nature out of the water, just like the son of rational Lord teachings, the aroma, that's how we must have community development. Rework the sentiments initially until they appreciate the aroma. They get a smell. They get curious for universal revelation. And then the second stage of that development is to share any compilation of revealed cosmic science to our brothers. That's community development. So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, even in death, left a signal as to what we need to do with the masses of our people. Yes, we have had a mass incineration. But the sister says she know how the cage bird sing. We know how to make the cage bird sing again. Rework the sentiments and then bring the light of revealed religion to the souls of our people. Brother Imam, that's community development.
Brother Imam, I wanted to ask you, it seemed, I want you to continue with the theme of the seemingly, I believe, I haven't kept up with the statistics that you've perhaps had, the poll, seems that the poll numbers have it seems that the poll numbers have Mr. Trump even down in Georgia. Am I correct in that assumption?
And certain polls, that's correct. One poll had him as much as 7 points down.
In Georgia.
Another one had him 4 points down. If the
he might even lose the South.
He's 2 points up in South Carolina. Let's talk about Louisiana may flip. but the race really electorally is over. If Pennsylvania and Virginia, but above all, red state, North Carolina, where she's an amazing 9 points up. Romney beat Obama in North Carolina. Obama won North Carolina by a few thousand votes in 2008 against John McCain. She's 9 points up. The situation is dire. Mr. Trump
believes that the election will be stolen from him. This is his excuse because he's not prepared for what probably will be one of the worst landslides since Senator McGovern. It would seem that the patriotic American and his, I think one of the best mistakes he made, and far as the Democrats would say the best mistake, when he started disrespecting Mr. Khan. Here's a man who helped me serve in the Salvation Army. And he has now made pronouncements on the military. You know, after Mom's apple pie, I must tell you, I served in the United States military. And you don't talk about the United States military. I mean, I've served in the military with Caucasian, with probably white supremacists. But they say even in the foxhole, you become my friend. So you have to remember this, that he can talk all that trash he wants to. But the Mr. Trump, who didn't serve even in the Salvation Army, and claimed flat foot at why he was not in the draft, essentially a draft dodger, now makes pronouncements on the military. What effect, if any, has that had? I want you to repeat for our audience, someone just tuned into the broadcast, give us the statistics in Louisiana, poll numbers in South Carolina, and all the numbers in Georgia.
Well, there's talk about strength for Secretary Clinton in Louisiana. That's somewhat a little distant. South Carolina, he's up too. And they're not that people smell blood. They're going to really turn up the African-American heat in South Carolina. If that heat get to cooking, that 2 points will leave in a heartbeat.
Yeah,
same thing about Georgia. That African American vote, as you said earlier, can.
Yes. It's a heavy military vote. What happens if the military, retired veterans, and the active duty military people at the Charleston Naval Operations Base and other places turn against Mr. Trump? He's 2 points up and South Carolina, so that could go. Let's even exclude the African American vote. Let's talk about those retired veterans.
That's right. Let me tell you in your audience.
Yes, he's not a Bronze Star. I don't even think he has a Boy Scout. As far as I know, he's not even a Boy Scout. So talk to us about the military and those statistics, because you're making my political brain operate.
Well, the Gold Star family combined with the statement on veteran John McCain and smart talking and trash talking about the Purple Heart has really had an impact in military and veteran circles. Now, they've taken a poll. What are the five worst things that Donald Trump has done? It's a poll out. They have it. Number two is the attack on Sister Khan and their status as a Gold Star family. 84% of Americans detested that. Number one, leading by a little bit, is when he made mockery of that disabled reporter. situations they have him flailing away and making mockery. That act and what he did with that Gold Star family is what's doing him in right now. Then when he implied that Second Amendment people should assassinate Hillary Clinton, Secretary Clinton, that's killing him. We haven't even seen the results from any polls from what happened midweek when he said the president of these United States is the founder of ISIS. Now, I'm an athlete in my younger days, ran a little track, and I remember one time I had a lead, and I thought that the race was over. And a guy went into a kick and came and got me and ran me down. Same thing about politics. It's never over until the fat lady sings. So no one on this in this audience should think that it's over. But politically, Mr. Trump is on the verge of a precipice. That's a catastrophic political disaster, not only for him, but for the Republican Party. If she goes up to 14-point lead, then they can lose the House, which is a heavy lift, but also the U.S. Senate, which is a much easier lift. I predict right now that they probably are going to lose the U.S. Senate, with her now being nationally averaging 7.5 maybe points ahead on the national level. But as far as the states, she could very well demonstrate a major surprise in the South in this election cycle. That's just a fact. But she already has locked in 273 electoral votes. Of course, you know, it takes 270 to prevail.
There's even been some talk. There's been some talk recently of forcing Mr. Trump out of the race for Governor Pence to run and choosing another vice president. This is how desperate the elements have come in the Republican Party. It seems like doom. I forgot to also ask you about the great United States Senator, and I think he's great. I don't agree with him. The great U.S. Senator John McCain, who served in the United States Navy, the services I served in. And I thank Allah for Imam W. Dean Muhammad that had me appreciating my own service to this country. But not only that, it was that he was a prisoner of war, and Mr. Trump denigrated him.
That's again, right, but I think, I'm sorry, Brother Man.
Salvation Army. As far as I know, Mr. Trump, I researched his background of the piece in the New York Times on his father. And Mr. Trump, as far as I know, didn't even serve as a Boy Scout. So what does that say about his leadership? What does that say about the punditry that even chose him? Well, I don't know what the punditry. But it seems to have been a media stunt. Yes, sir.
You asked some heavy stuff in those questions. Let me deal with Senator McCain, great American, but he made a mistake by not denouncing and disendorsing Donald Trump. So he's locked in a close contest, locked in a very, very close contest in Arizona. That state may flip. And by the way, Mitt Romney's state, Utah, may flip against Trump. they put a Mormon independent in there, and he might siphon away enough votes to flip that state to change the outcome. But so the Latinos in Arizona, they are registering like 90 going north. Now, when I had a race once where I defeated some folk in the Democratic primary, they were not willing to accept that defeat. They knew I had, running against me on the Republican ticket, a well-liked Caucasian friend of mine. I say that he's really a friend, always been a friend of my family, but he was running as a Republican. They calculated that if they could write in enough votes, now, these are black powerites who supposedly want black folk in office. They thought that it could give him a victory. But it was a general election. And in the black belt, it's not going to be any ticket splitting. Writing in and taking the time. No. The cliche in the back belt, hit that thing one time, whop, straight Democrat. That has implications for Senator McCain. Okay. The people who don't want Trump, they are not going to maybe split the ticket. They may hit that thing one time, straight Democrat. And I guarantee you the Latinos are going to be told, don't even look over there splitting, talking about a Republican candidate. Hit that thing one time, click it, straight Democrat. Now, as far as the media, initially, the media was making a lot of money off the Trump candidacy. They admit that now. That's why he got all that pre-television time. They don't deny that. They admit it. And as I said once before, the show leader of CBS said, they knew it wrong. He said Donald Trump was bad for the country. But he grew for the bottom line at CBS. Everybody's heard that statement. Now what has happened? The media still cover Trump, but they have figured out that we can criticize him, cover him, but criticize him and still have high ratings. We don't have to have him on and let him talk and softballed it. That's how he was able, in my opinion, to get the momentum to defeat his 16 Republican rivals. So if you see all these little cable channels, they're talking about Trump, but now it's highly critical. They see the poll numbers. They see the tea leaves on the wall. But they're not ready for this thing to be called because they want a tight race to keep making money. But they have to acknowledge the fact, what can we do with a man who make these statements and then come back 2-3 days later and say, I'm joking, I'm being sarcastic. How can we as media maintain any integrity as a journalistic institution if we projecting this man seriously and then it backfires on us because the next day he talking about he was joking? So that's the situation now with the media. Even though they have desire to keep this thing close, I think basically Donald Trump has been so ridiculous that they've had to turn against him. And he'll make some more mistakes, and they're going to have to double down on going ahead and reporting him for what he is, a candidate that's
Steve,
not qualified
Steve,
to be president.
Steve, have made some real big decisions. And I said boys because men are ones who submit to God. The big boys have made some decisions. And there's a rambling in the a fight in the heavens. Mr. Ells is out. It's interesting that the law firm that Mr. Ted V. Wells is a partner in is the same law firm that Fox News chose to do the investigation of Mr. Ells. It seems Mr. Ells is suffering quite a few ailments. And Mr. Murdoch himself, his son, had to come into the Fox News to run things. Seems that there's a different world today than it was some years ago. Mr. Ells is out. The law firm headed by Mr. Ted Wells, the descendants of a slave, is now investigating the master. What do you make of that?
Well, it's very, very interesting because Roger Stone and Roger Ailes, Roger Stone being Donald Trump's behind-the-scene mastermind, his out-front mastermind is Paul Manafort, who has been a business partner for Roger Stone for years. That's Mr. Inside and Mr. Outside for Donald Trump. Now, Roger Ailes and Trump told former President Nixon some things that made the one they call Tricky Dick even trickier. Roger Ailes took that darkness that they manufactured together with President Nixon in 68 and eventually took it into cable television. The American political system, the prime culprit for our dismal, bad state, in my opinion, is not even close is Roger Ailes. There's no doubt about it. But not only did he set up this whole thing of polarized American, polarized politics, but he put pressure through so much success on other cable news to the start themselves. So he's also, in my opinion, been a force in destroying anything like objective journalism in America today. Now, he's caught up into this thing, but he leaves with a parachute as large as from Alabama to New Jersey. He leaves with a sweet deal. There's even talk now, and I don't know whether it's going to be manifested, that before he ride off to the sunset, he going to devote some of his time to advise Donald Trump behind the scenes. I don't know how true that is. That was before this implosion and the polls and the collapse. He may read inevitable defeat and not want to get involved. So that's the situation with Mr. Ailes. This law thing, all that, is nothing but a bunch of pity pat. Ultimately, if they arrange for those women to get their monies and pacify them, Mr. Ailes is only going to get a slap on the wrist. He's going to walk away with millions.
Politics in our community, but I have to.
Hallelujah.
I received a call from a brother, Imam, who we're very close friends, and I told him I would be doing the khutbah there in the city of Tinley Park in Cook County. So when I said to him the convention, he asked me which convention. I said, Father, I know there's only one. And he said that there are two conventions, one that's the one that was set up by the ministry Imam W.D. Muhammad, and the second one is set up by someone else who claimed to have been a follower of Imam Muhammad. He decided to hold him a convention with his cohort. What do you make of that in light of the fact that Islam would be bringing 40,000 people to its convention, also to be held in Chicago, mainly of immigrant Muslims? 5,000 showed up for an Indian convention, and there was another convention of the Muslim from the Bangladeshi community. But yet African-American Muslims from Imam Muhammad's association decided, the Imams decided to split off on the ministry of Imam W.D. Muhammad and have their own. What do you make of that in light of the fact that this is a highly political year and Muslim African Americans should be showing unity, especially those who follow Imam Muhammad? Does this have anything to do with that verse of the Quran where Allah said they set up my messages only as a way of opposition and not in support of the Prophet's mission? Am I going too far in understanding that?
I don't think you're going too far, and I'm going to be very, very brief. We know what happened after the late Honorable Elijah Muhammad passed away. There were all kinds of brothers running around with their little special brand of the Nation of Islam. And people just put that on Minister Farrakhan. But we know there was others. Okay. We see a similar situation now. I don't know what it's going to take to extract from our hearts this deep-seated, problematic disease of our inability to unite and work together. Obviously, the Nation of Islam didn't cure the disease, and even the light that the Imam brought from Al-Quran has not removed that poison from our hearts. And I know the Willie Lynch letter is phony, but it must be some in it, because it looked like it might be 1,000 years or more before we're able to unite as a people. And you know I told you that I'm hesitant to get involved in any kind of organized, conjoined effort in our community because of this political insanity that should not exist within a community that was taught by Imam Muhammad, that had the example of Honorable Elijah Muhammad, blessed with the Prophet himself in the Holy Book. That's something that I must admit, I detest how we can't come together and unite as bricks in a solid cement structure, as teeth on a comb. I don't understand why we can't do it, other than the fact that it's nothing new. It's one of those early badges and incidents of slavery that I was talking about early on.
What do you make of Imam Alfred Muhammad, religion means alive, a regular unpopular figure, being chosen by a democratic process at a majority vote, actually a unanimous vote of the committee of the mosque cares to be the khatib this year at the convention. Now that portend that there's a change coming about in the community of Imam Debedin Muhammad, and a man who had been a pariah in the community is now emerging to be one of its leading figures.
Brother Imam, being a pariah here or a pariah there is irrelevant. As long as you're not a pariah before your Lord, and what your Lord intend to grant, we know can't nobody withhold by looking at a person, a servant like they're a pariah. That's not pertinent. That's not relevant. It's a good signal. And I hope that you understand the seriousness of such an honored position and the awesome responsibility that you've been granted. And I surely plan to make dua that you would meet the challenge and that God will bless you to discharge your responsibility in an excellent manner. That's my sincere hope for you, brother. So, but it speaks volumes that there's a change of wind in our community. And some of these folk, I'm going to say to them, you don't have to be a rubber man to know which way the wind blow. That's what I say to that.
Well, I would I would say that. Yes, I believe that. I think people should watch the weather. I think they should watch the Holy Book, because the book tells us how to build civilization. We had a great leader with great insight. I'm going to turn one last final question. I read somewhere on Facebook, it was a phenomenal posting. It said, what would happen if 1 million African-American men marched through the community and asked every African-American, 1 million African-Americans, to give $10 towards the historical black colleges and universities? What do you think of the idea of us starting campaigns, massive campaigns of self-help? It seems to me we need to set some goals, wild people. And one of the things I intend to do in my khutbah is to address a sign-up campaign to ask people to get to work. Let's rebuild first our community and then the African-American community, and consequently people will look at us. I believe in 4 years from now, if whoever the president of the United States decides not to run or be declared too old or incompetent to run or won't run or whomever that would be, and again, I'm not making political predictions, certainly within the next 8 years, I think there will be an opening. And I believe we're going to be up and running if we set some goals for our people. So one of the things I'm going to be doing at the convention is calling for goal setting. Let's set up to open up 300 Clyde Muhammad schools. Let's set to buy and run 40 historical black colleges and universities. Let's set to open up 100,000 businesses. I don't believe that we are helpless. I believe we can change our plight and it will change our image. And we can compete just as we have competed in sports and won. African-American woman won the gymnast contest at the Olympics. African-American winning in swimming. Why can't we win in life, period?
Well, I'll say this. Brother Imam, are you still there? Your phone went out on me. Are you still there?
Okay. I don't know whether you heard me or not, but I'm wanted to really talk about the self-help mission of empowering ourselves educationally, I believe we have $2.1 trillion. It seems to me that if we put our wheels to the grind, we could, in fact, I was talking about a post that I saw on Facebook, said, what happened if 1 million men marched through the neighborhoods and collected $10 million and asked African Americans to give that a week towards developing the African American college? That would be $500 million. In 10 years, we would have raised $5 billion. Is that an impossible dream?
It's certainly not. And again, we've been going now for a minute, so I'm going to be brief with my answers. Brother Imam, you know what was said by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He said, the only thing wrong with thinking big is not thinking big enough. And you're going to step front as an advocate. Articulate big vision. Imagine big accomplishments. We dealing with a Lord that has given us dominion as broad as the heavens and earth. So those are goals you just articulated. They may sound big, but from that perspective, they're not really that big. They're goals that we need to strive with might and main to accomplish. I guess I've said enough of that. Enough on that.
Well, I thank you, Brother Imam, and we are looking forward to having you on the broadcast tomorrow, and we will hear from you in your continuation of your great address from mass incarceration to mass resurrection. We're going to continue that journey. We're not going to stop. We're not going to give up, just like Fannie Lou Hamer never gave up, Annie Mae Cooper never gave up, Rosa Parks never gave up. We don't have no give up in us. Our mothers didn't give up. Why should we give up? So I thank you, and I thank our honorable and noble audience, all of you at Morehouse College that's listening in the class of 2020. I pray that God give you continuous vision. 2020, you'll never have to put on your glasses, and you will look forward and look to the sun, the guidance of God, and look to his prophets that he reflects the guidance of God, and look to the great stars, such as Dr. Benjamin Elijah Mays, Dr. Thurman, and others who have been on that campus. Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You have listened once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. We hopefully, next Saturday, we may have Alfred Y. Muhammad to interview you from Morehouse College. And hopefully you'll be also grilled by some of the future politicians of America. They'll sit there and interview you. I'll sit back and listen. Thank you, Brother Imam.
Sounds like a winner to me.
Yes, sir. And I hope you'll visit my son over there at Morehouse. He's closer to you than he is to me now. So you have
as soon
to
as I get a first chance, I indicated to you a couple of months ago that that would be a pleasure, and I plan to keep my word on that.
Thank you, Brother Imam. Thank you, our noble and honorable listening audience. You have listened once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. Thank you.
Thank you.